The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
So I listened to these stories, and it just kind of struck a chord to me where, as an Anishinaabe person, myself, Ojibwe, I needed to be doing more than what I was doing, which was nothing. And I wanted to give my kids something that I didn't grow up with.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Miigwech for joining us. Native Lights is, at its core, a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have wonderful conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, you name it. And they all have a wondrous mixture of passions, and we talk to them about their gifts and how they share their gifts with the community. And it all centers around finding purpose and amplifying Native voices. And we are continuing that mission today. Leah, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Cole. Thank you. How are you?
Great, great. You know, I hear there's some Wi-Fi issues in your house right now.
There are. Thank you. I'm going to go fix them by rebooting our router, just like we should, because I know that from the internet.
Show must go on.
So, Cole, you know, with my internet being out, I'm just going to move forward.
Yeah.
move forward, be strong, and go straight to our interview today. Wayne Soames, he was recommended by a great person in Minnesota, and I just want to say, people can recommend awesome Native folks
Please.
If they want to hear them on Native Lights.
Please do.
So yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, minnesotanativenews.org, we're there. We are open to suggestions. So I think Wayne is a great person, and he is the tribal liaison for Mahabe Atwa Community Action Partnership, and he leads strategies to build inclusive and equitable approaches to upward economic mobility for low-income Native people in Northwest and West Central Minnesota. He's a citizen of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians, and he's a graduate of Kendall College. So super stoked to talk to him today.
Yeah.
Bonjour, Wayne.
Bonjour, Ginawa. Wezawe benesin dagu, makwa endo deem, bawa tingin duun jiba. Bawa tingin ishinabe, kimbindike biya gaz. Gaz awa wanga genda nungam. So yeah, hello everybody. My name is Wayne Soames. I'm originally from the Upper Peninsula, Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. But today I am in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
How are you doing? How is the family doing?
Everyone's doing well. Wife's at work, kids are at daycare. My three-year-old and I, we just got back from Porky's Sugar Bush down in Maple Plain, Minnesota. So went and experienced a little bit of traditional maple sugaring, the old fashioned way, which was great. So he really enjoyed that, and it was wonderful. Great weather for it too.
What was his favorite process, or what was his favorite
getting,
part of that whole situation?
Getting to eat it. Eat the
yeah, of course. There you go.
The maple taffy. You know, he got to play quite a bit in the snow, so he enjoyed that. But he also he got to kind of stir the boiled down stuff, and he helped stir that into maple sugar. So he did enjoy that.
It's the most delicious time of year. So Wayne, how are you doing, and what is on the top of your mind?
Yeah, so I'm doing great. You know, the thing that's always on my mind, and you know what I'm always thinking about is Ojibwe language, and you know, finding different avenues to learn it, to share it, to speak it. Here at home, my kids don't know a ton. You know, I think they understand more than they can actually speak. But I try to use it as much as I can here at home. Hopefully one day they would like to pick it up and kind of carry the language on. You know, I currently am a teacher assistant for Dennis Jones, Pei Bame Benes at Bemidji State University.
Baybomb.
Helping.
Nice.
Helping him out, teach that the class while Anton Troyer is away in sabbatical. So, you know, tonight I have a language table with a group that I met through a different class, and we've been working through Paybomb's book. So kind of thinking about that as well. And yeah, you know, I hopefully one day would like to be I don't want to say fluent, but a proficient Ojibwe speaker. And most of my day is spent thinking about that and different words to learn and how to pass that on as well.
Well, that's really great. Let's see. So can you talk a little bit about language then and what you're doing? So you're helping out. Is there a place that you are with it? Is there a relationship that you have with it right now that you're exploring and feeling out?
Yeah, it's very much a love hate. I help Paybomb out there. I do a language table Monday nights with a group of folks. Every Tuesday, I work for Mahabi Atwa Community Action Partnership. Every Tuesday, I teach a small group of coworkers there the language. I'm currently enrolled over in Ojibwe Motadida Omagitakiminung over in Cloquet, Minnesota, which is an adult Ojibwe immersion program. So it's, you know, there's some really good days where feel like I'm picking it up and it's everything's going great and I can understand most everything that I'm hearing, but then there's some days where, you know, it sounds completely new to me and I don't know what I'm doing, and you know, I don't know why I made this decision to start learning this difficult language, but it, you know, and everyone keeps telling me it's a lifelong process and there's going to be some really tough parts of it, but if it's something that you want, you'll get there and just keep plugging it away. And that's what we keep doing. So, there's some good days and some bad days for sure with it.
Well, how about we transition over a bit to Mahabi Atwa? And can you give us a bit of an overview of what Mahabi Atwa is?
Yep. So I work for Mahabi Atwa Community Action Partnership. We are a nonprofit. You know, we have several programs and offer several services, Head Start, weatherization, housing, elders programs, you know, and we're looking to work with low income folks and providing programs to help them achieve self-sufficiency. We cover a 5-county region, and that's kind of what our name Our name is the acronym of all those counties. So going in order, it's Manoman, Hubbard, Becker, Otter Tail, and Wadena counties.
So you're serving low-income, you know, Native folks. What are some of the more common challenges for these individuals that you see, that you experience?
We serve all low-income. My role specifically, and this is a pretty new role to us, I've only been in it about 9 months, and right now, I think the biggest issue and the biggest challenge there is with serving the Native population is just that relationship between, because we're still looked at very much as like a governmental organization, and just that history and that trauma, just that relationship with the Native population, and not even, you know, a lot of people up in Manoman County not even knowing about Mahabi Atwa and some of the services, just because a lot of the services they can receive that we provide, a lot of those tribes already provide those same services. You know, but there are some additional things that Mahabi Atwa can do that some of the tribes don't have funding for or don't provide to their citizens.
What makes Mahabi Atwa unique then? What are some of those services that they can that you can provide that a tribe doesn't?
Yeah, so there's a program we have called through the Elders Program, and I can't remember exactly. It's called the RSVP. And so what it does, you know, it allows elders to sign up for a program. If they're doing any type of volunteer work, anything like that, they can sign up through this program where they get mileage to the place where they're volunteering at. While on site, they receive insurances that so they're covered while they're on site working, volunteering. So that's something that we can do that I don't think White Earth or some of the tribes around us have that opportunity.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Wayne Soames, a citizen of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and tribal liaison for Mojave Atwa Community Action Partnership. In his role, he works on outreach, tribal collaboration efforts, Ojibwe education, and increasing cultural practices. He leads the strategy at the organization to have an inclusive and equitable approach to upward economic mobility for Native communities in Northwest and West Central Minnesota.
So a lot of your work, like you mentioned, is around building relationships with, you know, Native communities, Native folks in your region. What does it take to build relationships?
So for the past 9 months, I've been doing a lot of calling and emailing and just trying to set up one-on-one meetings with a lot of different folks who are either, you know, prominent people in the community, maybe they're a manager of a certain program that we can collaborate with potentially, you know, these different leaders in communities, maybe spiritual leaders. So I've just been trying to meet with these folks at least one meeting a week, sit down for an hour and just, you know, tell my story, tell them what I'm trying to do, but then also listen to their story, what they need in their community, what they want in their community, and just trying to get a feel of where they're at and seeing if I can do anything to support them within their community and just slowly start to build the relationship that way. I got a really great piece of advice kind of going into this role. Dr. Schroyer told me this, and he said, you know, in order to go fast, you need to go slow. So that's what I've been kind of following these past 9 months and just slowly, you know, meeting these folks, just slowly building these relationships. And for example, the Nattawash community, their elder sewing program, their elder sewing group there, they needed a couple more ironing boards and some extension cords. And it's a small thing to do, but we were able to get some money and we purchased those for them and dropped them off. And just trying to, you know, do the small things to build those relationships.
I appreciate that advice so much. I think it can be really tempting to rush into relationship to, you know, for everyone's benefit, you know, and when in reality, building relationships takes time, just like anybody else building trust and making it comfortable. So I would trust another person or invite them over to my house or, you know, something like that. So that's great advice. And that was in order to go fast, go slow. Am I paraphrasing correctly?
No, that's perfect. That's perfect.
That was it? Okay. Yeah. I jotted it down, but you never know. But yeah, that's great.
How did you gravitate towards this role? Like, what do you think in your background has helped you tackle this role?
Yeah, so my background, what I went to school for and did all that stuff for, is early childhood. And I worked for my tribe's early childcare program. I had started a program back home. So moving over here, I was doing some Head Start work and ended up doing some coaching for early childcare programs, childcare centers, and I was working a lot with the tribally licensed programs up around our area. And I was sent to this, it was an Indigenous Languages Revitalization Seminar workshop in November of 2019. And prior to this, you know, I didn't grow up traditionally, and, you know, I'd been to powwows, but never been to ceremony, didn't really do anything in the Anishinaabe realm. And, you know, I went to the seminar, and I listened to, you know, all these folks for the first time in my life, hearing like fluent Ojibwe being spoken. I listened to all these firsthand accounts of these elders, you know, talking about their time in boarding school and what happened. And this was a week before my first child was going to be born, Beckett. So I listened to these stories, and it just kind of struck a chord to me where, you know, as an Anishinaabe person myself, Ojibwe, I needed to be doing more than what I was doing, which was nothing. And I wanted to give my kids something that I didn't grow up with, right? So I told myself after that, all right, I'm going to learn Ojibwe, and, you know, it's going to be great. I'm going to teach my kids. Then my son was born, and first-time parent, it was very difficult. So I didn't actually learn Ojibwe right away. You know, it took me a year to kind of get into it, but I did learn to introduce myself, and I did that. At a work meeting we were doing, and my executive director was pretty impressed, and I was like, oh, hey, you want to teach some staff how to speak Ojibwe? And this is back when I didn't know anything yet, or, you know, I still don't know anything, but when I knew less. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's try it. And I kind of had to force myself to like learn it a lot quicker to be able to teach it. And so then I was doing that, and we got, because of that work, she invited me to this impact project where we looked at, you know, one barrier our community was facing, and we addressed that barrier, and we figured out, what are we going to do? And so the barrier we looked at was, you know, of all of the people in our 5-county area who are eligible for our services, you know, 25% of those people are Native American. But we were only serving 7% Native American. So we were looking at, you know, how can we get our services out to the Native community more? And we tried some different things, and, you know, we weren't very successful. We were trying to gather stories, but then kind of realizing we don't really have access to Native people. You know, this role started to get talked about and bounced around. Well, what if we have someone specifically just to work with the tribe and work with, you know, those Native folks? And that's kind of how we got here. So, you know, I talk about, you know, language is always on my mind, but then I think about like all the things that language has given me, you know, this role, you know, a ton of relationships. A long-winded story, sorry.
No, that was great.
Are people pretty receptive to Mahabi Atwa and their interest in helping Native communities and Native folks in your region?
Yeah. You know, I think there's some initial hesitation, kind of going back to, you know, Anishinaabe, Ojibwe, just Indigenous people history and trauma, and I'm white passing, very white passing myself. So I think there's some hesitation initially and kind of, we need your help. But after, you know, listening to them telling our story, trying to get out there in the community more, I think that has been, a lot of Native folks have been very receptive to the idea, and have been happy to listen and to talk and to, you know, even bounce ideas. We've had some potential opportunities that we've been close to doing, but just haven't worked out. Which is great though. It's you know, it's a starting point, and I think the more people learn about us and learn who we are and what we want to do and kind of our mission statement, I think the more people we'll bring on board and let them know that we're here to help.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Wayne Soames, citizen of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and tribal liaison for Mahabe Atwa Community Action Partnership. In his role, he works on outreach, tribal collaboration efforts, Ojibwe education, and increasing the cultural practices. He leads the strategy at the organization to have an inclusive and equitable approach to upward economic mobility for Native communities in Northwest and West Central Minnesota.
You mentioned Indian boarding school, and I see that you're the grandson of a survivor.
Yeah.
How has that helped inform, you know, what you're doing now and your life in general?
Right. Yeah. So I never knew that until last year when I was kind of getting going with the language learning and talked to my mom about it. And, you know, she just one day she's like, oh, yeah, your grandma was in, I believe it was the school in Harbor Springs, Michigan. Over there, and yeah, just one day, oh yeah, your grandma was in boarding school with all her, you know, cousins and siblings and all that, and so yeah, I had no idea, but that kind of just, you know, reaffirms why I'm doing this, and you know, we talk about having the love hate relationship with you know, Ojibwe language and how difficult it can be, but that just kind of, you know, on those bad days, just a reminder, it's like, you know, we're doing this for those who suffered and who fought to protect the language and keep it safe and, you know, just keep Anishinaabe culture safe in itself. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's a weird thing to think about, and also to think about that I didn't know it until my mid-30s, but it's also, you know, probably one of the main driving forces now that keeps it going for me too.
You mentioned love hate, right? And I kind of get what you're saying with love hate. Can you explain a little bit how your relationship with Ojibwe Mo'en changed? Can you go into that a little bit more after finding out that your relative was a survivor?
Yeah. So I think prior to knowing my grandmother was a boarding school survivor, like I always had that option of kind of like opting out. Like, you know, I've learned a lot. I've learned like enough to kind of pass on to my kids or like to share with my kids. Like, I probably don't need to learn any more language. Like, I think I kind of had that opt out. But then once I learned that about my grandma, then I guess there was no going back. There was no quitting. You know, I'm in that Ojibwe Mo'otari, the OO program over in Cloquet. And after my first session there, you know, I came back and I told my wife, because I understood maybe like 2% of what was being said there. And I came back and I told her, I'm like, I can't do this. I'm done. Like, this is too much. Like, I'm way out of my league here. And she just kind of reminded me about why I was doing it and kind of like, you know, like one day you're going to be, you know, one of these people that kids are coming to find to get help learning the language. And, but yeah, there's so many factors that go into it now. And knowing that my grandma was a survivor and the two, Wizawa Benace, Paybom is Menawente. So he gave me this name, and it's the spirit keeper of the language. And so now I think I'm like doubled down that I'm stuck learning this for the rest of my life. And there's absolutely no going back anymore.
Yeah, I could see how that kind of solidifies the motivation to keep with becoming proficient, as you put it, in Ojibwe Mo'en.
Just to add to that too, like I never knew my grandma either, because she passed away when like shortly after my mother was born, and so like I lost all connection to the Anishinaabe part of me through her, and I feel like that too. The language is kind of like bringing me back into touch with that, and that's been a pretty big contributing thing to keeping it going as well.
I think it's pretty interesting you mentioning the opt, like you have an opt out option if you wanted to. What would you say to people who are on that edge of they can opt out or they could they could you know, be more passionate about it. Like, I'm just curious. That question popped into my mind.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think I would just tell them, like, go at your own pace, take it slow and learn at your own speed and learn what you can. And because it's very difficult, and it's, you know, you just, and as long as there's people learning some of it and sharing some, and you know, not getting to this point of proficiency, but just having some words in their back pocket that they use now and then, you know, that's still keeping it alive, and that's still carrying that language on. And just, you know, you don't need to be a proficient speaker. You just have some words, know some words to use, and don't stress out about it, because it's a lifelong process. And you know, even a lot of these folks who have been doing it for 10 years who are over at OOG with me, and you know, they're still learning brand new stuff too. Every time they go over there, you know, I see them writing down in their notebook, scribbling something down. So yeah, it's lifelong, and keep plugging at it.
We always like to ask if you have any final thoughts, anything that we haven't asked you.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, if I could talk a little bit about, we have a community garden at Mahubi. I do a lot of education with the staff as well, and